Light da bear Adonai, Elmo Shelemor, da bear El Bnei Yisrael, v'yikhuli tiruma, meyes kolish asher yidvenu libo, tikhu es tiruma si. And Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the people of Israel, the children of Israel, that they shall take to me a donation, truma, from each person, asher yidvenu libo, whatever their hearts desire to give, from zero on up, tikhua terumati, that is where you should take my truma. Little bit further. V'asuli mikdash v'shachanti bitocham, and you shall make for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell among them. Among you. Among them, I'm sorry. That's very important, too. This is a greatly shortened show. My apologies for that, but something has a very impending deadline, and I have to use my time for that. But I didn't want to leave you with nothing. You had a Mishnechnas Adar. We'll play another one at the end of the small show. And that's the story. OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue, albeit a short one, of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and I gave Zira the day off because of the shortness of the show. Recording and first availability is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, that's the 15th day of February, to which it corresponds, and the Hebrew date is the 30th of Shvat, which is the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar. Briefly, let me tell you that when a month has 30 days, the following month will have 2 days Rosh Chodesh, the 30th day of that month, and the first day of the new month. Shvat has 30 days in our fixed calendar, and therefore there are 2 days Rosh Chodesh Adar. Basically, the reason that it was preserved this way, because in the time of Sanhedrin, there's only one day Rosh Chodesh, the day that the Sanhedrin proclaims as Rosh Chodesh. But to be fair to the 30th of the day, in its actual role of being the day that follows the 29th, then it would be possible that the day following the 29th, even of Shvat, would be Rosh Chodesh. So because the fixed calendar puts 30 days for Shvat, why should it lose out on its maybe sanctity of Rosh Chodesh? So the fixed calendar works in such ways to give it that honor, as well as tonight, which is the first of Adar. This Shabbat is Parshat Truma, and it's only Truma. Last week was Shkalim. Next week will be Zachor. The week after will be another break. The following week will be Purah, and the week after that, HaChodesh. But we'll talk more about that when we get there. Let's say Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121, which is the psalm that I like to use when we don't say Tachanun, as we do not on a Rosh Chodesh. Shir lama'alot, esa einai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai, osei shamayim va'oretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha, al yad yaminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeisecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omidim ebein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'meafela lo'ora u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amein. I want to read the English of that, which I usually don't do, because of a conversation I had the other day, which I want to share with you. But here's the translation, a song of ascents. I lift my eyes up to the hills, from where will my help come? My help comes from the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot stumble. He who guards you does not slumber. See, the guardian of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. The Lord is your guardian. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will guard you from all harm. He will guard your life. The Lord will guard your going and coming now and forevermore. The other day, I was talking to one of the regulars at the Mincha, 1:20 in the afternoon at the Israel Center, the OU Israel Center. And it was a person who I offered the amud to, that he should lead the davening. And he told me why he doesn't like to. Because we say a chapter of Tehillim every day after the Mincha. And he's opposed to that. Because he says, what do you do when you really need it? Well, the answer when we really need it is we say two or three of them. But the reason that I initiated the reciting of Tehillim every day is because there are problems that exist in our society, in the Jewish world, and in the world at large. I made the mistake once of allowing Fox News, in addition to Arutz 7, to flash their bulletins onto my phone even when it's closed. And it's hard for me to remember a day when something negative and bad was not reported. As of yesterday, it was the terrible shooting in a high school in Florida. And I think it was almost superfluous for the report to say that one of the students was Jewish. That kind of tragedy, doesn't matter if people are Jewish or not, it's a tragedy for human society that these things happen. And I am astounded by the different places all over the United States and elsewhere where reports of violence of this type are common. So I believe that every single day we need to ask God for his assistance. The two chapters that I have chosen are both generic in that one asks for God to help, calling from the depths, Mima'amakim Kraticha, and the other speaks of raising my eyes to the mountains, from where will come my help or my salvation. And it's interesting that one is from the depths and one refers to lofty mountain. And maybe that's why we have one when we say Tachanun and the other when we don't say Tachanun. But I believe very strongly that it is not out of place to recite the chapter of Tehillim every day. And I've done it. We've done it at the OU Israel Center for a long time now. And many people leave before the end, but many people stay. And I've been doing it on the radio show for a long time as well. What I would like to do is touch upon two points, maybe just from the Sedra, and we'll save the Purim and the Zohar stuff for next week, Miritz Hashem, and the week after. Well, the week after, we'll see, because that's Purim itself. but not for us in Yerushalayim, but we'll talk about that next week. What I do want to say about Parshat Truma is the extra verse that I read, the command to make a sanctuary. In the wilderness, it was fulfilled by the Mishkan, a portable sanctuary that was dismantled and put together when they traveled and when they camped in a certain place over and over again for approximately 39 years of the wandering. It didn't get started until almost 1 year out of Egypt. And the time that they wandered was a total of 40, I think less 5 days, and this was less than a year that it got into operation, so we're talking about approximately 39 years. After Yehoshua brought the people across the Jordan River, there was a 14-year period of conquest and settlement, and during those 14 years, the Mishkan was based in a place called Gilgal. From there, it moved to a semi-permanent location. Let me just make sure I have my facts correctly. Well, I can't make sure if I pick up the wrong Torah tidbits from my desk, but here's the right one. We are talking about Gilgal, 14 years of conquest and distribution of the land. Following that, it settled in Shiloh, known as Mishkan Shiloh, where it's lasted for 369 years. That's quite a long time. Then it was destroyed after Eli HaKohen died and rebuilt in Nov for 13 years, and then Givon after Shmuel HaNavi died for 44 years. That was 480 years total since the Exodus. And then Shlomo HaMelech commenced the building of the Beit HaMikdash in Jerusalem, where it became its permanent resident, not always standing. It's been destroyed and rebuilt and destroyed, but Jerusalem is now its home and it doesn't go anywhere else. First Beit HaMikdash had a tenure of 410 years, including the years of construction. 70 years of exile followed, and almost to the day the second Beit HaMikdash was begun being built, that was a number of years till it got off the ground, but there was a total of 420 years that it stood, including the building part. And then it was destroyed, and we're talking now for the last 1950 years approximately, 1,950 years, we have been without a Beit HaMikdash. During that time, we, in typical Jewish fashion, have learned to cope without this holiest of places, of buildings and of places. And we've coped by building community synagogues and Batei Medrash for Torah learning. A synagogue is actually called a Beit Mikdash Ma'at, a miniature temple. And we have bumped up the davening so that it is not merely prayer, but it also replaces temporarily the korbanot, the animal sacrifices, in the Beit HaMikdash. And based on a famous song, the words coming from Sefer Charedim, and the melody, I don't know who made it, Bilavavi Mishkan Evne, speaks of my building a Mishkan in my heart, and putting there a Mizbeach, and the sacrifice is my soul that is dedicated and devoted to the service of God and Torah and Mitzvot. All of that very nice. Then you got the Kotel, the Western Wall, which is a remnant of what happened or what it was in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. There's a lot of different parts of it and different periods that it was built. And we have special songs and prayers that ask for the restoration of the Beit HaMikdash. But over 1,950 years, people tended to feel, at least on a subconscious level at the beginning, that we have coped very satisfactorily without a Beit HaMikdash, that our yearning in the prayers which we say and the songs which we sing are maybe meant and maybe it's just a song kind of thing. But my point is, and with this I will conclude, the point is that we really should have, with all of that which we have coped with, we should still maintain after all this time a sincere, deep-felt, heartfelt yearning for the restoration of the Beit HaMikdash and temple service. We will not give up our prayers. They were back then in the time of the Beit HaMikdash also. They precede the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash, but the communal focus of the Beit HaMikdash is something that we not only give lip service to, but we should have heartfelt longing for. So that's one thing I wanted to say. The other is the fact, and this is sort of well known to those who know it well, that the command of the Mishkan to build a Mikdash, a sanctuary to God, and all of the details find themselves in two places in the Torah, pretty close to each other, in this week's Parsha of Truma, next week's Tetzaveh, and the beginning third of Ki Tisah. There's all the details of the Mishkan and the Kohanim and their garments, etc. Then there's an unfortunate break in the middle of Ki Tisah for the sin of the golden calf. And in the wake of that sin, we have Parshiot Vayakel and Pekudei, which basically have a lot of repeated materials from Terumah and Tetzaveh. And the commentaries point out that the actual carrying out the command as transmitted to the people and carried out by the people under the leadership of Moshe were a reaction in the aftermath of the sin of the golden calf. As if to say, the human nature of needing a physical focus, which is what the calf was, of our spiritual energies, which was not properly done, now has a kosher way to have a physical focus of our spiritual energies in the form of the Mikdash, in the form of the Kelim, the vessels and furnishings of the Beit HaMikdash. And that's true to a great extent, but it's sad if people think of it only that way. I believe that the existence of the full detail of Melechet HaMishkan in this week's Truma, next week's Tetzaveh, and the beginning of Ki Tisah are meant to say to us, true, you didn't hear about the command to build the Mikdash until Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai and destroyed the golden calf and broke the first tablets and then went back up for a second set of tablets and then came back down on the very first Yom Kippur. That's the reality of it, but the theory of it is presented in these sedras when God spoke these words to Moshe Rabbeinu. The procedure of transmitting Torah was God to Moshe and Moshe to the people. And there was a break in the Moshe to the people because of the golden calf. But one should not lose sight of the fact, and not everybody agrees with this, but many do, one should not lose sight of the fact that temple and its service, Mikdash, Beit HaMikdash and its service, is not just a, well, what can you do, response to a great national sin. It also was part of the plan in the first place, recognizing human nature, even before it manifests itself in Egel HaZahav. I won't say more than that. I will just finish up with Mishenichnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha. When the month of Adar commences, says the Gemara, in the end of Masechet Ta'anit, one increases in joy. Does not give specifics as to how that joy is manifest. It leaves it up to each person. But the bottom line always has to be that our simcha has to be l'shem shamayim, l'shem mitzvah. Our simcha has to be focused on the spiritual qualities and not just purely physical, because that leads to drunkenness and frivolity that is not appropriate in our service of God. So keep that in mind. We'll talk more about it next week. I wish you now a Chodesh Tov, Shabbat Shalom, L'Hishtameach.